everybody's talking about, but baseball ended some weeks ago. I don't know why everybody's talking about it now. I mean, congratulations, Houston, honestly.
Yes.
they could use it for a number of reasons. But I'm sorry, baseball. You know, no, I'm sorry. I take it back. Baseball isn't over because I don't know if Kershaw was credited with the loss in the last game of the World Series, but he did pitch, and that was good enough for me.
That's the game with the big orange ball, right?
Yes. Can we please murder the sports ball joke? Can we please,
no.
Wes? No. No, no. I'm back. I can set some ground
You're
rules.
Back.
I am sick unto death of sports
Are
ball
you
jokes,
back?
Atheist.
You're back?
Only for this week. Only
what?
For this week.
What?
But I am, no, but, you know, if you're going to do, is that the thing with the big orange ball? Because I'm completely ignorant of modern events. Doesn't make you look good, atheists. Two, further alienates you from everybody else. Three, completely ignores the positive aspects of professional sports in, like, the whole prevention of war area. And four, it's just annoying to those atheists of us who actually like sports.
I don't even have a flush toilet. What are you talking about?
Okay. What the heck are you doing here? This is Ask an Atheist with me, Sam Alvey, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. I am alive. I am reasonably well.
I was going to say, we're going to do Welcome Back, Cotter. We're going to do some Shady. Look who's back. Back again. Yeah.
So I have an email. This is Brandon from Hawaii. I think you guys may have covered this email already, but I should probably respond to it directly. Thank you for all the time and effort that goes into the show. Becky has done a great job on the show, but my family misses Sam and hopes that he is well. Thank you, Brandon. That actually, I got that email while I was up in the mountain, and it warmed my heart. It was nice to see that I was, you know, I was appreciated at a time when I could definitely use being told I was appreciated. So thank you very much. So what I've been up to lately is my vacation kind of officially ended about 2 weeks ago. I'm back in Tacoma, but I'm not really working on Ask an Atheist right now. I'm leaving that in the very capable hands that I've left it in, which includes Wes, even though I just called him a yutz.
Well, you did now.
Yeah.
And now apparently anachronistic yutz.
Yeah, anachronistic yutz. You know, it's very capable hands. I really like the direction the show has been going. I've been spending my time working on Radio Tacoma, KTAHLP, and preparing to work on KTQA, which I don't think I've actually mentioned outside of the Patreon, the Patreon feed. Mm-hmm. But it's a second radio station that I'm also working on.
You got a definitely two for one deal on that radio station thing.
I did. And the other thing is, I'm now that I'm sort of known in the community broadcasting field, that people. I may have a job as a radio engineer, not a full-time gig, but a gig.
Congratulations.
Moving forward, which would be pretty nice.
That's awesome.
So what have you been up to lately?
I have been involved in so many different hobbies. I have my show, Hands Free Football, at Hands Free Footy.
Yeah.
HandsFreeFootball.com. Plug, 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 plug. but we actually had big news the last couple of weeks. We got syndicated by an internet radio station, all sports talk radio.
That's good.
Which they picked us up and they run our show a couple times a week, and we're getting new listeners from that, which is pretty damn cool.
Yeah, no kidding.
So
that's awesome.
That's cool. I had me and some friends took a trip to Victoria last weekend.
So I thought you were going up there for soccer, but it turns out you had already had that plan.
Yeah, everyone thought we were going up for soccer. It just happened to be, like, we didn't know when because for us it was like our friend had a timeshare that his parents owned, and it's like, hey, we need to use this, otherwise we lose it. So if you want this weekend, have at it. And we're like, well, yeah, sure. You know, free lodging in Victoria for a weekend. Why not? And then afterwards, I found out that Seattle was playing Vancouver in the playoffs. This is MLS playoffs. This is soccer stuff, just to be clear. Mm-hmm. But we were in Victoria. And actually, during the game, we were literally on the ferry and in the car. So I missed the whole game, which...
Oh, that's...
It's a little sad, but that was a 0-0 draw that was lacking in excitement. So apparently, I didn't miss all that much.
I did have my most soccer moment ever thus far while I was on vacation. I was at Doyle's, which we don't really do post-show there, but I'm there a lot. It's kind of my bar. And we were watching... I think it was game 5 of the World Series, and then the New York Chicago game.
Okay.
And it was I think it was the knockout game.
Right.
And so I'm watching that, and I'm watching both the teams that I'm rooting for, the Chicago dumpster fire, and and the other team, not the Dodgers. So I'm watching these, and just it was kind of depressing, because at that point...
Just a bad day for Chicago and in a bar.
Yeah, pretty much. And then somebody comes in and orders a drink and sits down, starts talking about soccer, and I'm talking about it with him. And we start talking about... And then the news of the day is that the U.S. didn't make it in, you know, into the World Cup.
Yes.
And so it turned to that, and we started talking about it. And I brought up something that you said, that you think it's going to be bad for the MLS when they don't make it into the World Cup. And I brought that up, and we started talking about that. And then it turned into a long conversation about the merits and flaws of relegation in the United States.
Oh.
And he was, this is a guy from Scotland, so he's like, yeah, I've seen it in all the leagues up there. Now I'm watching soccer here. And he was against it. We were both like, yeah, we don't think it fits in the United States. So it was literally the most soccer moment I've ever had.
I was just going to talk about our new team that we're getting here.
Oh, yeah. Tacoma's getting a minor league soccer team.
Yes.
Yeah,
Tacoma S2.
It's called S2 now, but it sounds like they're going to give it a more appropriate Tacoma E name.
Sure.
So I guess the FC Aroma, maybe, might be appropriate.
I actually kind of like that. Yeah. I could roll with that. What would the mascot look like? More importantly, what would the mascot smell like?
I'm just imagining a poo emoji.
Okay, I take it back, because I hate that emoji. Oh, boy. Kid.
So, yeah, S2 is the sort of minor league affiliate of the Sounders, and the thing is that the Sounders organization is very good at developing players. They're not so good at running a minor league team. That's a very specific skill.
It is. Mm.
So they partnered with the Tacoma Rainiers, who are very good at that.
They understand, especially because of the proximity of, you know, the Rainiers to the Mariners, they have to send, like, they are constantly in communication in a way that other, say, AAA teams are not.
Right, right. So hopefully this will get the business side, because the Sounders are still controlling the player side.
Right.
But now with the business side, with the Rainiers, hopefully this will really take off.
That'll be
exciting.
Yeah.
I'm actually kind of excited about this. They're going to lay out a green on the Rainiers field for...
Brit City Rio? I don't know. Yeah.
I like that.
Maybe we just need to do a bit of a moment where we sit back and just think of names.
So... Whose show is this again?
I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I don't. I've been kind of avoiding getting into the news because it is fairly, you know, it's depressing today, and I've been trying to keep a positive face going.
Right.
And sometimes the best I have for a positive face is just incoherent rage screaming.
Fair enough.
Which is something that I can do when I'm not on the air. I don't have to use my words. I can just go, and it's fine.
I've seen this. It works.
So Saifullah Saipov, the suspect in the New York City truck attack on cyclists and pedestrians, has been charged with federal terrorism offenses, including providing material support to ISIS. Saipov is an Uzbek resident of New Jersey and allegedly told investigators that he was inspired by videos produced by Islamic State proponents and chose to utilize a truck for his attack on Halloween to inflict maximum damage against civilians. New York police report that Saipov seems to have followed instructions for such attacks publicized on ISIS social media channels. Governor Andrew Cuomo stated that Saipov, who resided legally in the U.S. on a diversity immigrant visa, was radicalized domestically.
Well, it sure sounds like Trump wanting to keep all immigrants out right now would really do an amazing job of that. Or not.
You're gonna have to unpack that one a little bit for me.
Well, how he always wants to keep out anybody that's not an American.
Well, I think the important thing to point out here is that I don't believe this immigrant would have been targeted by his current immigration blocks.
Right.
This
guy would have gotten through, absolutely. Like, there's,
yeah.
This is the insidious part of terrorism, is that, like, we want to do something, and we can argue about what we can do, and you have to question, like, you know, when it does come to balancing your own freedom and your own ability to just live your life and then having some security. But all the measures taken place would not stop something from this happening. Every once in a while, something's going to get through. Someone's going to get through.
Totally. Yeah,
absolutely. And in this case, they might come through fine. They might pass through Trump's testing, which is getting, you know, increasingly racist and classist. But this guy was radicalized while he was already in the United States.
Right.
And so the immigration blocks that he's looking for may not actually apply. Now, we were going to talk about a little bit of this, but then we woke up with another story that's sort of related. More than 20 people have been killed in a shooting at a church in Sutherland, Texas today, with another 20 injured. The investigation is still unfolding at this time, but police report that the unnamed gunman was killed either by a self-inflicted gunshot or by police. Governor Greg Abbott tweeted that his prayers are with all who were harmed by this evil act.
I would call this a terrorist attack.
Well, I think that's fairly... I don't know what terrorist means anymore, but if this is not a terrorist attack, I don't know what is.
In fact, the article I was reading was saying that this wasn't a terrorist attack, it was something else, which the more cynical part of me, and the part, I hope I'm wrong on this, but there's a cynical part of me that says what they mean by that was he was not an Arab who did it. It was
right.
a
yeah.
white guy.
That's precisely what they mean.
Yeah.
It's like one of the episodes, I actually just shopped this to you guys, the production team, of doing an episode called This Year in Christian Terrorism.
Yeah.
Because there seems to be a thread going around a lot of people, most of whom will probably not listen to our show, I grant, but it's really fuel for other people of what has happened this year around the world that was terrorism perpetrated by Christians, because it happens a lot more frequently than you might think.
It's just not labeled that.
It's either not labeled that, or in some cases there's not a lot of overlap with the United States and its power projection, so it's just not reported in the same way.
Right.
And so maybe it's time that we specifically spent some time talking about it. Not to whitewash the fact that this thing that happened in New York is Islamic terrorism. You
right.
know, I'm not going to hop on that train. But, you know, I think religion in as of right now, in the within the world, religion seems to be the major cause of terrorism.
Yeah.
However, and this is where the thing gets scary. I woke up this morning, and I want to get your response on this, is I woke up this morning and I read about this shooting in Texas. And it's shooting up a church. And every time somebody shoots up a church, and it's kind of terrifying that I have that phrase in my mind every time someone shoots up a church, because
right.
it happens with some regularity. I always think to myself, oh, crap, what if it's one of us? It's just this little feeling I have in the pit of my stomach is that one day someone who is an atheist is going to shoot up a church. And what that day is going to look like for me, and precisely how bad am I going to feel, and what am I going to do about it? Is it just me and my outlook on life that I think that day may be coming? Or, like, I don't know how I'm supposed to feel about it. I have this thought in my head that, oh, crap, what if it's an atheist shooting up a church?
I mean, you can always play the odds game. I mean, it's going to happen someday.
Yeah.
I mean, odds are it's going to be religious people that are doing it most of the time.
Well, again, that's just playing the odds game, religious people versus non-religious people.
I think you're actually coming from a better place than I am, because you're actually like afraid of, you know, the group that you want to have the most, forgive the phrase, faith in.
Yeah.
Being part of it. Whereas I immediately... You say that, and in my head, I immediately get frustrated, and I think the problem is there are enough examples that you want to do an entire show of this year in Christian terrorism, and none of that is evidence that Christianity could encourage or lead to terrorism. But if there was one act mm-hmm. by an atheist shooting up a church, that would be seen as proof of everything they've ever said about us.
Right. And that is the fear. That is the fear, is what happens to me, and, you know, is my family safe now that I'm a public atheist in a world where an atheist has shut up a church?
Right.
And just as it, you know, where for me, I don't think I would be that safe compared to all of the terrorism that's done in the name of Christianity, nobody's going to churches saying you're responsible for this, you must do something with this, where I think the Muslims are somewhere in the middle,
right,
where we're such a small group and we're so universally hated, and there is the potential that if we, you know, if somebody commits terrorism in the name of atheism, it might be the one thing that lets Muslims and Christians lock arms and
just wait for those Trump hashtags to come out after that.
Oh yeah.
I have always had this sort of personal way of describing what it's like to be an atheist, and it's the concept of first out. If you picture a group of people who see themselves as a group, like atheists are first out. It's like, well, atheists, they're different. We all at least believe in something. Atheists, they are just something else. But right. then once the atheists are out, well, Muslims are out because we all at least believe it. Or actually, I'd say probably first would be like Hindus are out because we at least believe Abrahamic religions and they believe this weird Eastern stuff. So they're out. And then the next out is Muslims. And then it's Christian. And, you know, there's always a next out yeah. as you get more pure. But I always think atheists as being the first out.
Okay, so like the outer ring.
Right.
Okay, I get it. Yeah, I think there's something there.
The middle school sports team thing of being last picked.
We're the last. I think another thing is a lot of the atheist community thinks that atheists aren't capable of doing something like this, and I don't believe that.
No,
and
I don't
think,
believe that for
I think
second.
I get a lot of... Sometimes I get trouble for that.
I think that atheist is, in general, there's a lot more that lean towards the humanistic type of belief structure.
Right.
So I would at least try and say that most atheists are less likely to do something like this because we value life more.
But that also
takes... life more.
I would like to think that. But that also takes us into sort of the morality briar patch that is mental illness when we discuss it
right.
in context with acts of terror like this, which what if you're an atheist but you are hurting? What if something is wrong with you that drives you to do something like this?
I mean, your standard definition of atheist is no God.
Yeah, it's a fairly broad definition. So by choice, it kind of has to include people who are nihilist, might not really care about stuff like that. But the sort of the proof in the pudding there is that we have gone this long without an atheist shooting anything up in the name of atheism. I'm reasonably certain if you look, you'll find atheists who've shot people up. I mean,
sure.
I remember was a Chapel Hill shooting, an atheist shot three Muslims.
Yeah.
It was a absurd argument over parking.
Right.
Ended up being or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, it was wacky. Yes. It was road rage. I don't want right, to call yeah. it wacky, but it's just like absurd.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess we can't have this discussion without describing, you know, talking about the Soviet Union, which was theoretically an atheist state and happened to kill a lot of people.
I believe Mike Gillis was the one who said the thing about the Soviet Union is they were not blessed with an overwhelming sense of rationality.
Yeah. Empiricism was not really in their in their ideology.
Yeah,
I guess
they replaced religion with a state. They weren't.
Yeah.
They weren't, like, skeptics.
Right. not atheists in the model that we talk about now. It's just, you know, is it worse? Because I'm seeing a lot of violence. I'm seeing the Nazis in the news more often than I used to. More about that later. Is it actually worse? Or is it just my view of things?
It feels worse. I will definitely... say it's not just you. I mean, there's a general sense that things feel worse.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of go back to Steven Pinker's book, The Better Angels of Our Nature,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, when you look statistically, you know, terrorism is scary and mass shootings are scary, but you are so much less likely to die of a mass shooting than of, like, your, you know, heart disease or a car
right.
accident. Like, these are actually really rare situations. And particularly when you look back in history, like, your chances of dying of violence 1,000 years ago was so high as
yeah.
compared to today.
But that seems kind of a bit of a sideshow to my core argument, which is, I am not afraid that I'm going to die in a mass shooting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not. The statistics there just bear it out. I'm more likely... Well, I might not be more likely to win the lottery because I don't actually play. But there's a lot of really incompatible things that are more likely to happen than dying in a mass shooting. It's not my personal safety that I worry about. It's the fact that you've got a group of people who are armed who feel like it's okay to do this. And they might be a statistically small number, but the trend line seems to be going up. And that's the thing that scares me.
Right.
It seems to be a denial of the very concepts that not only this country are founded on, but the humanism that we adhere to in the United States, where talking doesn't work. Apparently, there's no place. I don't want to sit down and talk my problems out. I just want to pick up a gun and shoot people. And if that trend line is going up, I feel like something really terrible has happened, and I've missed it.
Right.
I don't know. So on that happy note, this is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to the break. When we come back, we're going to talk about monuments and the Johnson Amendment, stuff like that.
Has Ngadwe Trust invaded your town? Are you tired of government officials who want to plaster Ngadwe Trust on taxpayer-owned property? Are you afraid because your local sheriff placed an In God We Trust decal on the patrol cars? We are here to help. The original motto project is for those who feel the separation of church and state is an important issue and should be honored regardless of your belief or lack thereof. Theists, non-theists, and all free thinkers are welcome. We need your support to show politicians that diversity exists within our nation, and their promotion of a monotheistic religion and push for theocracy will not be tolerated. Stand up and be heard. Join us at originalmotto.us.
My name is Jonathan Ariola of TDTF Pod. The more voices you hear, the more we observe and feel, the more we learn about the other facets of this complex and wondrous beast that is humanism and free thought. Join me on the science-loving journey through topics like justice, murder, family, diligence, taste, history, society, race, boob jobs, law, addiction, video games, fear, sacrifice, children. Wait a minute, not sacrificing children, that's not what I meant. Bring the popcorn and watch me break down the issues too deep, too fast. Join me at TDTF Pod. I'm Jonathan Ariola. Talk to you soon.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist with me, Sam Mulvey, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Do not adjust your dials. It's actually me. Joining me is Wes and Dave. How are you guys? Again?
Hello, everybody.
Do people have dials still? Is there anyone out there who listens to this on a thing that has dials?
Yeah, they're called linear encoders. Or not linear encoders because they rotate. But you know the dials on the front of your car stereo where you can turn it just forever and it just keeps looping over?
Yeah.
Technically a dial.
Oh, well, and that's fun because just today I was giving a ride to someone in my car. Or no, it was last night, and she kept trying to turn the stereo down with the air control and didn't understand why it wasn't going down because I don't actually have a dial. I have a little like touchpad thing that you slide your finger down on.
Well, you have a moon car.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I'm just sitting there. She's turning and turning. She's like, why is this not? I'm like, you're making it colder. You're just making it colder.
Humanists of Washington and Seattle Atheists, along with the University Unitarian Humanists, cordially invite freethinkers and their families and friends from Seattle and beyond to celebrate the coming winter solstice with our annual solstice potluck. Saturday, December 9th, 2017, 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the University Unitarian Church, 6556 35th Avenue Northeast in Seattle. Children are welcome and essential. And an essential part of this celebration. We'll have some craft activities for them and welcome teens who wish to help facilitate and assist this with us. Or something along those lines. It's been a while since I've done cold reads. This year, we are encouraging attendees to bring new socks to donate to Treehouse, an organization benefiting foster youth in the greater Seattle area, and feminine hygiene products to benefit women and girls at Cascades Women Program, Hammond's House Women's Program, and HopeLink. And I believe it's not listed here, but I think that might actually be working with the Satanic Temple of Seattle.
Oh yes, Menstruating with Satan.
Yeah, that's
great program.
Great, yeah, great name.
Of course, the most important question, Sam. Are you cooking?
No.
Not this year.
I'm on ridiculous drugs for my back right now.
You want to add the ridiculous drugs to the cooking?
No, I prefer to stay out of prison, Dave.
Fine. Go bring laws into this.
Other things that we haven't mentioned yet is we are going to be at the East Side Solstice Dinner, the cast, the production team of Ask an Atheist. Not written down here. There'll be details in the show notes. And I just wanted to put a bug in your ear, listeners. Especially you guys who have been listening to us for a long time or have been with this show for a long time. March. Sometime in March of 2018 will be our 400th show.
Oh my goodness. 100 shows, my God.
Yeah, I've done this for 300 and sometimes. we're planning on hopefully not a fundraiser, but we're definitely planning a party here in Tacoma.
Right.
So,
oh boy.
Start thinking about it. And now, the word probably I think the most salient news that is that isn't really being talked about right now. I mean, it is, but it's not going to get the front page because there's a lot of bad stuff happening, but this is really important. A clause at the end of the 400-page Republican tax bill would permit religious organizations to promote political candidates from the pulpit, effectively repealing the Johnson Amendment. The amendment, which dates back to the 1950s, prohibits 501c3 organizations from endorsing political candidates. While Trump promised to repeal the Johnson Amendment during his campaign, over 4,000 clergy members around the nation signed a letter opposing the repeal last August.
Oh my goodness. I'm honestly surprised that somebody signed it.
Yeah,
but good on him.
Well, the idea that clergy starts being actively involved in the political process of the United States is distasteful to more than just the atheist and humanist communities. There's a wide swath of Christians who really believe that the pulpit needs to stay out of politics, who believe in the separation of church and state. That's why Americans United for the Separation of Church and State is specifically not an atheist organization. They actually want to work with churches who believe as we do on this subject, and I think that's important.
Their director's a Baptist minister, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. And so it doesn't surprise me that there's wide appeal on this, but unfortunately, among the GOP, their base believes that really churches should be recruitment centers for whatever conservative political party happens to be in power at the moment.
Right. Which is weird because it used to be like the party wanted to be recruiting churches, and now the church has become such a massive force on the right that it's now turned on its head, and now it's the churches are doing the recruiting for the politics.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, the traditional wag the dog theory.
Right. Well, that's the thing, is I'm against getting rid of the Johnson Amendment. I think it's done a lot of really good things for the United States politically. I'm not going to say that it's, I think it's a reflection of the very concepts that were at the foundation of the United States, which is a government that is secular, that does not make a decision within politics or within religion, either for a religious sect or for no religious sect. The United States is not supposed to even be an atheist government.
Right.
Despite what Christians may tell you.
Secular and atheist are not
the same
synonyms.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the reasons why I don't really like the phrase secular humanist, even though it's the phrase I use to identify myself with, because it creates an allusion to a secular government that we're really having to fight that down, that secular does not mean atheist, that
right.
It means no decision whatsoever.
Yeah, secular just means it doesn't take part.
Right. I'm against this idea, but I also kind of wonder if this might blow up in their faces a little bit, because it looks like it's not just religious 501c3s. It's all 501c3s.
Right.
Which would include, I don't know, Humanists of Washington, Radio Tacoma,
FFRF,
where we suddenly, you know, a lot of these really highly motivated organizations are suddenly going to get a new breath of life in them because now we can more fully participate in the political process. This might not go the way they want to. Now, I realize numbers are on their side, but you've got a lot of really, really smart people. And a lot of really driven fighters, at least rhetorical fighters, on our side. And so I wonder, I kind of wonder how this would work for them. And I don't think it would work the way they would want.
Right. My thing on this is like, I'm also opposed to the repeal of the amendment. I think the amendment should belong there, if only as a ideological position. Like, it's, you know, the amendment, even though, like, we've done stories on the show about how this amendment is not enforced. There is an office in the IRS whose job it is to find churches promoting candidates, and they fired the guy who ran it, and they didn't hire anybody else. So it's just an empty office that is entirely, you know, all of the responsibility for enforcing this amendment falls on this office that doesn't actually exist anymore.
Right.
To be fair, as I recall, that guy hadn't really done anything in years either anyways.
Exactly. So this is not something that was ever enforced. And the thing is, like, when you really dig into what the amendment says and how the law works, like, a 501c3 is a very specific kind of organization.
Yeah.
If a church wants to be able to endorse a political candidate, all they have to do is sign up as a 501c4.
Yeah.
And the only difference between those two is that a 501c3, the church does not pay taxes, and the members of the church, the people giving money to the church, can also write off those donations as tax-free.
Right.
If a 501c4, that only works one direction. Only the church is tax-free. The
donations are not.
The donations are not. That's right. The only difference. So if they're okay with that, which is such a minor thing. I mean, seriously, most people give $20 a week into church, and they're not going to write that off because at the end of the year, it's $120 is no big deal.
Well, I just edited, I've edited some stuff for Radio Tacoma this week. And one of the things that I have to do is make sure that there's no candidate endorsements in our stuff. And I actually had to edit a few out this week because it was stuff that was not necessarily intended for air on KTAH LP. So I just needed to edit it out a little bit. I wonder, I might go to the FCC and say, look, churches, you know, apparently this lack of political speech thing is going away. Do you think the churches who own the majority of community radio stations are not going to start talking about political candidates on their stations? Are they going to get away with it and we're not? The effects of this could be pretty wide.
Right.
It might be tempest in a teapot time, but...
Well, no, and the point I'm trying to make is that for the churches who are making it their issue that they want this overturned, the churches who backed Trump because he said he would overturn this amendment, there are other ways for them to get what they want.
Yeah.
But it is like... We have seen time and time again, the slightest finger that they have to lift to get what they want is somehow religious persecution.
Right.
Signing a paper to opt out of Obamacare is too much work that infects my religious freedom. Never mind that everyone else who has to follow all the rules has to jump through a million hoops to do it. They're already exempt from doing all the work.
Yeah.
And they're still fighting. Like, it drives me crazy because it's so stupid.
This the Johnson Amendment, though, is their boogeyman, though. They just want that dead by hook or by crook, though.
I wonder, would I trade them the Johnson Amendment for the motto? I don't think I would.
No.
Yeah, I don't think I would. You know, I hate doing a thing at the beginning. Oh, this is the news story that everybody's talking about or isn't talking about. That's not what I mean. What I mean is that there's some really important stuff and the attention should go there.
Right.
It doesn't surprise me that the intention is going there. CFI is talking about this pretty a lot. I mean, there are organizations that are on this. Do not get me wrong. And what I really hate about stuff like this is that they tack it on the end of a bill that's not about it. Really.
A 429-page tax bill.
Yeah.
Completely unrelated, yeah.
This is why I think legislation should be treated like source code. I really do. Where you can use lexical tools on it. You know, you can use revision control. I would like to see diff files for legislation. Where it's like, I don't care how long the bill is, but if you put in... something like this is going to be highlighted in red and we're all going to see it. But it requires a change in the way how legislation is done for that to really be effective. So that's me. That's futurist Sam, I guess, is what that is. So pizza, speaking of the future. Papa John's has demanded that racists not eat its pizza in response to a neo-Nazi website claiming that the pizza franchise as the official pie of the alt-right. Papa John's endeared itself to enthusiasts of the Daily Stormer after restaurant CEO John Schnatter. Becky really wanted me to not make that mistake, and I just did. Blamed his company's declining profits on players kneeling during the national anthem to protest police brutality. Schnatter had initially suggested that Papa John's, which serves as an official sponsor of the NFL, would pull advertising from the sports league.
You know, funny that during the same time, other places like Pizza Hut say their sales are just fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
well, my first question is: Papa John's never been on the wrong side of something. Let's just be honest.
Not that I can think of now.
Yeah. The guy who runs Papa John's, the William Schnatter. Schnatter.
How dare you besmirch the name Kirk this way?
I mean, he raised his prices because of
birth control.
Birth control. He raised his prices because of. Because of minimum wage rate, you know, requirements, he says, you know, he's on the record as saying he's not required to share his profits with his employees if the company does well. Not on the right side of just about any argument I've ever seen.
Yeah, he's kind of an awful dude.
Yeah.
I can't think of one positive thing to say about this guy. I mean, well, even his pizza is kind of not good.
Yeah.
At all. I actually kind of like Papa John's pizza.
Oh, well, this goes into a fairly in-depth discussion about pizza.
I hear that Chicago pizza is horrible, though.
Why you gotta undercut me like that, Wes? Why you gotta do that? Are you looking to get booted? Is that what's that? You need next week off or something? Because you could just say, Sam, I need next week off. I'll go, okay, that's fine.
Love you.
As you may have inferred from my time on Ask an Atheist, I have a complex relationship with pizza.
Mm-hmm.
When I think pizza, I think of a very specific food that I don't get. I don't get very often. Okay, you know, there's real pizza, which is in Italy and whatever. But whatever, that's not, that whatever that's
that doesn't count.
Yeah,
either.
Yeah. Sorry, Europe, you don't count. but you've got
right here.
In Chicago, you've got really two styles of pizza. You've got the casserole lasagna thing that we serve to, that people associate with Chicago for whatever reason. And
I believe a couple people a year drown in those things.
Intentionally, I would imagine. I'm going to go the way I want. It's a, you know, food-related assisted death, I guess, is what that is. But you've got that, which I've only had at really special occasions where somebody was really trying to make the party like Chicago, mm-hmm. or specifically when we had people from out of town in town where they really wanted to try the Chicago style pizza. And usually I would follow that up with the kind of pizza I actually grew up with, which is Chicago style cracker crust pizza, which is cut into squares, round. It's round, but it's cut into squares, and it's a very thin crust with toppings piled on top of it. And okay. that's when I think pizza, when I want to have pizza, that's really what I think of. Now, I haven't lived in Chicago for most of my life, even though it seems to be some sort of definitional part of my character. I've been an adult here for longer than I was an adult in Chicago. I was only an adult in Chicago for like 8 months.
All right.
Does the crust actually like crack and crumble? Like
it does at the edges. Okay. You get this weird sort of conglomerate. I don't know. I think conglomerate is the word, where the sauce dries out, the cheese dries out, and then you have the cracker crust, and it creates this really awesome like pizza mantle that I love, because I love pizza crust. And it's really nice. But then towards the middle, where you get the squares that have no edge on them, it's really greasy, it's really soggy, it's kind of wonderful. Okay. But you don't have to blot it, because if you need paper products in order to eat pizza, you've done something wrong. New York.
I would also go to so far as to say, if you have to use a fork on pizza, you're doing it wrong.
Right.
Yes.
But that's when I had teeth problems, I had to use a fork. It was the only way I could eat pizza.
That's a separate issue.
That's a different thing. Okay, I get it. So I may be a little bit of a pizza snob, except it's they're almost two different categories. You've got the Chicago pizza, and that's pizza, but I don't live there, and I haven't lived there for a long time. And then you've got pizza-like objects that are still pretty tasty, but in different ways.
Well, that's one of the ones that for me, like, I've always been like a big pizza chain guy. Like, I was Domino's when I was younger, Papa John's for a while. Mm-hmm. I'm currently a Papa Murphy's guy.
Papa Murphy's is nice.
And they have what they call Chicago pizza. Now, it is not pizza as described as anyone from Chicago would ever describe it. Like, this has right. no relation to Chicago whatsoever. It is a double crust. They got, like, a crust. They got a layer of meat. They got another crust. And then they got sauce and, onions and stuff on top of that. It is fantastic, and I love it, but I don't know how it relates to anything Chicago. It's just, I don't care what you call it. I want that one. I want it's the sure. giant thing.
As long as we're mentioning this, I used to love Little Caesars. Back in the day, it used to be really tasty. Now it's just kind of really horrible. But
well, the Little Caesars guy is kind of the anti-Papa John's guy, isn't he?
I would, yes. Yeah. He actually, him and his company have a foundation that actually paid Rosa Parks' rent on a place she lived for like 10 years
yeah.
or so for a whole bunch of other things. Anyways, he seemed pretty cool.
It's a crazy
but place, okay. I'm also kind of one of the weird ones because I actually like pineapple on my pizza.
Well, this is what I was working to.
And I also like artichokes on my pizza.
A lot of people like artichokes and you're all wrong and that's fine.
horrible.
But I'm actually working towards the pineapple, the subject yes. that must not be named. which is on pizza, no pineapple, no artichokes. No, it's onions, it's peppers, it's mushrooms, it's sausage. You know, it's the standard, only the standard on pizza. On the pizza-like objects, which are a completely different culinary category.
Sure.
In my head.
Yes.
Canadian bacon and pineapple is great.
Freaking amazing.
It's great.
It's so amazing.
I would never put it on a Chicago pizza, but it's nice.
You're all wrong.
Oh, no.
That's fine.
No. Yeah.
But your pizza conceptualization is, your pizza meme is broken.
That's probably true. No, the problem with that, the real problem I have with pineapple on pizza is that almost any topping you can just pick off. You can pick off a mushroom, you can pick off an olive, you can pick off whatever. But pineapple juice soaks into the pizza. You cannot eat a pizza that has pineapple on it just by taking the pineapple off.
Yep. Nope.
Yeah. Well, no, there are other things you get. Like if you get sun-dried tomatoes, that stuff sinks in.
That's
if you get artichokes, that's, you know, like anything that's brined, basically.
Yeah.
You're going to get the brine for that thing in the pizza.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to Cooking Time with Sam Olvey, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-784. To bring it back to the topic, I'm not saying Papa John's is Hitler. I'm just saying they'd serve pizza to Hitler.
Yeah, he would sell to anybody he can. Like, he says he doesn't want them buying his pizza, but, like...
Especially if they shared his values.
But, yeah, well, even so, I mean...
He'll take a liberal dollar, but
he'll take a liberal dollar. Like, he dumped a lot of movie. I actually wonder if he'd lost all that money because of all the advertising he did for the Ghostbusters movie in 2016. I'll be honest with you, because it didn't make a lot of money. But that's just kind of it for me, where that movie was, you know, that was a movie that a lot of liberals were into. There was a lot of hubbub around that. I don't think he cares where the money is coming. I think he's that much of a late stage capitalist that he just wants the money. And I think he's thinking that if he says he's not the pizza of the alt-right, he's still going to get pizza. You know, they're still going to go for it. He gets to have his he gets to have his pie and eat it, too.
I'm sure there's a couple wink-winks in there.
Yeah, probably. Papa John's isn't that bad in the pizza. You know, it tastes fine, but boy, it does a number on my digestive system. I'll tell you that much.
The thing that Papa John's has going for it is it reheats really well. There are a lot of pizzas where the second time through they're not great, but okay. Papa John's actually pretty good that way.
I just need more places that have artichokes on their pizza and Papa John's.
I suppose we're going to be having these conversations about our increasingly distant memories of Papa John's. I was only introduced to it fairly late in my life. Is that the sort of the pizza sphere of Chicago ends somewhere between Chicago and Peoria. May not be true now, but that seemed to be the case there. And the first time I had Papa John's was in Peoria. So, yeah. Have we talked about this taking a knee business on Ask an Atheist at all?
I know I haven't. Okay. This is a subject that I've been very hesitant to speak my piece on. Uh-huh. So, I'm not sure if my view is very controversial. It just seems like it's a subject that has everyone so impassioned where, honestly, my opinion is really kind of, I'm more anti-national anthem anyway. Not the song itself. It's, you know, it's a fine song.
Right.
But I'm against, like, giant patriotic displays before every sports game. I just want to watch a game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need the military to come in and do a big production number for me first.
Right.
So that's more where I'm coming from. So when it comes to knees, like, I think most of the criticism and most of the controversy is just a way to ignore what the people who are kneeling are trying to say.
I don't think that's a controversial statement at all.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we're all in favor of people taking a knee during the anthem, right?
Yes.
And why they're doing it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Are we debating this?
No.
I don't think so. I can't imagine anybody involved with a show who would disagree with that stance.
I get what you say, because a lot of times these social things that we get, these social arguments that we have, for an atheist or somebody who does a lot of thinking or has somewhat non-populist thoughts on the subject, our opinion on this topic du jour is an adjunct of a much larger argument that we have. In your case, you're in favor of people taking a knee as a sign of protest, but also you don't like all the weird political stuff we do with national anthems anyway.
Right.
It's like you're on this side, but it's part of a larger argument that you have.
Right.
Like back in the marriage equality argument we had in 2012, my opinion politically was, I think you know, obviously marriage is for everybody or it's for no one. Where, and that was my argument and I stuck to it, but if you wanted my philosophical output, my philosophical output or my philosophical opinion on it, I don't understand why government is involved with marriage in any way.
Right.
I don't really get it. I don't know why marriage is separate from contract law. And I'm a socialist.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you surprised, sir. You shared that view with a surprisingly large number of very right thinking evangelicals, where
yeah.
it's just like, no, it's not. We're not opposed to government gay marriage. We're opposed to government marriage. Like,
yeah.
that's our thing. Keep the government out of it.
Yeah. I don't know that the government has a place here. But the thing is, the government does the effect, though, and where the attention must be is the government does have a place here. And right. And in 2012, the government said that only a certain segment of the population could get married. So we need to change that.
Right.
And so that's like that was my focus. That's what I was doing. But there was this other thing that discussion I was having in my mind at the same time, much like you're having with taking a knee.
Right.
But yeah. OK. So if we need to have an official, I think we're all in favor of it. I don't think that's a scary statement. Yeah.
Second.
Actually, I have a bit of a moral conundrum that I'd like to discuss Ooh. With you guys about this one. I possibly said a joke that was broad, but that was bad. That was bad.
You have never done Facebook. Such a thing before.
No, but one that may have been just in really poor taste, which is there was a discussion of the taking a knee controversy, and somebody said, I'm still waiting for somebody to explain how taking a knee hurts me in any way, which is a statement I completely agree with.
Right.
Yeah. But I'm a snarky jackass. So I said, well, if they take your knee, it might hurt a bit.
I kind of like it.
Is that too off color for, is that too insensitive for the topic at hand?
I don't think no. so.
Okay.
That makes me chuckle.
That's, okay.
Yeah.
Two white guys over here say it's okay.
Right. Well, I'm cutting that up. I mean, I'm asking you because you're in the room, but I'm this is a proxy question for literally all the listeners.
Right. Like, I personally don't have a problem.
I have a dark sense of humor and I use my sense of humor as a form of defense. And so sometimes I make quips that aren't good. And I wonder if I crossed the line this time.
I feel like I've actually had a personal sort of conundrum on the same level in sort of the media that I'm consuming and the sense of humor I'm listening to. And I listen to some shows where they make jokes that are absolutely awful and offensive.
Yeah.
But the people who make the jokes also spend a lot of time sort of explaining their bona fides on where they really stand. And it's very clear the jokes they make are in opposition to the stances that they profess. And so it's not like the joke is not making a joke about the subject. The joke is making a joke. The butt of the joke is themselves for being terrible about the subject.
Okay.
And it's like, you kind of have to dig down there. But once you know, I feel like you, Sam, have established your bona fides as like, people know where you stand on issues. So if you make a joke that seems contrary to those, it's obvious that's a joke.
I tell you what, though, is that I meet people who I feel like have established their bona fides who then go on and like, oh, yeah, I think racists are great. Or something like that. It's like sometimes I wonder if bona fides actually mean anything. Or yeah. sometimes people with well-established bona fides make a joke that people really hate and they get hate for it anyway.
Right.
And so it's for someone who uses humor as a defense mechanism, it's kind of a tough time.
Right.
Coming up like what can I say and not be devoured by locusts? I don't know.
Right. And it's one of those things. It's like you have made jokes that if there's somebody somebody I'm less comfortable with made the same joke, I'd be like,
yeah. Yeah.
But I know you. And so when you make it, it's like, that's hilarious.
Yeah. Because I don't think I've actually said anything about the taking any business, but I don't know why anybody would think I'd be against it. It's like, no, that's precisely the kind of thing I'd be for. And with that, I look forward to your email telling me that I need to go back to the forest and away from people, because I don't think that'd be fine. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We come back, we're going to be talking about the EPA and Russia, because that's, I guess, what we talk about now in America.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month, we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio vs. the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Allegedly, soccer is a beautiful game.
It is when you know what's going on.
That's the problem. MLS is 20 years old, and people are still shocked to hear that there's an American Soccer League.
That's why you and I are talking about it. This is a discussion of American soccer for nerds and beginners. It's a good first step if a crippling soccer addiction is something that's missing from your life.
Join the club. Celebrate the 20th anniversary of MLS by actually following the season.
Hands-free football. New episodes every week at handsfreefootball.com.
I want to bring it back, but it's more than basic.
Right, we're recording. This is Ask an Atheist, 844 Skeptic, 844-753-7842. One new member of an EPA advisory committee is on record as saying that modern air is a little too clean for optimum health. Robert Phelan is a controversial UC Irvine researcher who claimed in 2012 that children need to breathe particulate irritants so their lungs can learn to fight them off. Researchers at the University of British Columbia estimate that 5.5 million people die worldwide due to air pollution, and that indoor and outdoor air pollution is the primary cause of death and disease globally. Phelan is one of dozens of new appointees to the EPA advisory board, who is financially independent of the EPA per Director Scott Pruitt's orders. Many new appointees hail from industry and lobbying organizations, including Dow Chemical, Procter & Gamble, and the French company petroleum company Total, not the breakfast cereal, the petroleum company, and the American Chemistry Council.
It would be funny if those two companies were one and the same, though.
Is Total still, do people still eat Total, or is that gone? Is it something else?
Because I don't eat cereal.
Because it seemed like the cereal nobody ever ate ever.
But they advertised the crap out of it
through
the 90s.
Yeah, they really did.
Sounds like Grape Nuts. I don't know. Two things I would never eat.
No, it was like, if I recall, it was like Frosted Flakes without the frosted. It was just flakes.
No.
Well, okay. it was their big selling point was how much fiber they had.
Yeah.
They had,
which is what kids, you know, if there's anything kids love, it's fiber.
Yeah. Why are they advertising this during kids' cartoons? Because they're like, more fiber. And it's like, as much fiber as 100 of these bowls. It's like,
And it's not like they can say, hey, man, you know, if you eat this, you're going to crap more and you can do stuff with it. It's like, they can't do that.
It's just cornflakes without the flavor.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Kids don't understand what you mean by being regular. I mean,
on time to school.
Yeah.
So what, this guy doesn't trust the air that he can't see?
Well, it's a little weird having this conversation that the air is too clean when just a few weeks ago I was, you know, it was snowing ash.
Yeah.
Right.
And I literally, you know, I came down from the mountain and immediately kind of had to go back up the mountain so that I could breathe. And it, you know, it's actually snowing for reals now.
Are you turning into Abraham?
No.
Did you bring any tablets when you came down the mountain?
No, I'm really aiming for Spider Jerusalem at this point. I come down the mountain, I swear at people, and then I go back. Maybe take down a president on the way, you know?
Righteous indignation and a spider tattoo.
Yeah.
I need to see this.
Hey, man,
you're halfway there.
The very second I start losing my hair, that's what I'm doing. Because I'm not going to be the guy with long hair and male pattern baldness. That's just...
No, yeah.
I have very few fashion tips. That's one of them.
I'm about to that point.
Well, that's the EPA for you.
Well, yeah, and here's the thing about this concept. The concept itself that he's thinking of, there is some basis. In fact, it's more
very little.
It's more complex. But if you wanted to boil it down to, like, you want your kids playing outside, and like, if they eat some dirt, that's fine because that exposes them to various bacteria and everything that they eventually grow.
Yeah.
Their bodies grow accustomed to, grow immunities to, and then they're better prepared to fight those off in the future. This is actually a real thing that happens.
Is it?
air particulates. I believe it is. Like, I will accept that I could be really off base on this.
Okay.
One, but air particulates are like vaccination shots.
Exactly. Like, you're not worried about, you know, developing an immunity to carbon monoxide. Like,
is he like in the pocket of asthma drug companies? Because that would explain quite a lot. It's not listed there, but I'd be like the American Love for Asthma Company.
I'm assuming we just have to look at his resume to see where he's at.
Yeah, because it's like the air got so bad here in Tacoma that I don't have asthma, but I was issued an inhaler so that I could be in Tacoma. And not because Tacoma is terrible, but because we, like, most of the region was on fire this summer.
Right.
Yeah,
and
it was bad.
Yeah.
Seriously bad.
And somehow our air isn't clean enough. And we also have this, China just shows up a lot. Stuff from China, like China air just shows up and goes, hi, I am full of petroleum stuff.
Shockingly, pollution does not abide to borders.
Yeah. Yeah, that's weird. And
in fact, I believe our first, because the smoke in the area came in two waves. There was the first that was actually coming from the north from all the fires in Canada. And the second came from the south from more in California and Oregon. And the first time I saw a meme, it's a satellite shot of all the smoke flowing over British Columbia and the comment, we get it, Canada, you vape.
Yeah. Jeez. Now, the whole thing that you build up the, you should expose your children to some disease or something like that so that they can build up some sort of immunity, I think that might be folk wisdom. I don't know that that's actually been scientifically, there's a lot of science proving that. Or I don't know where the evidence is on that.
Right.
And I've heard people say, oh, yeah, that's totally a thing. But then I've also heard a lot of experts say, no, that's crap. That's totally crap. And by the way, there's so many, one of the arguments is there's so many bacteria and viruses in the environment that you don't necessarily need to expose them to bad diseases in order to build up immunity. They're doing that just fine on E. coli and the stuff that's just in our system anyway.
Right.
But the other side of that sort of folk wisdom is used by the anti-vax community.
Right.
In order to build, so it's like there's a lot of that whole idea of, we need to expose our children to bad things so that they can fight the bad things. There's a lot of weirdness and untruth surrounding it.
Right.
That I don't know. We're going to have to go to some experts on this one.
Yeah, I agree with that. The one I'd heard in particular was that there was a sort of move to, in the late 90s and mid 2000s, people didn't let their kids play outside as much because of fears of, child predators and strangers and all this stuff. Like, people would tend to be more internal, whereas when we were kids, we could run all over the town, nobody would care.
Yeah.
And that they found that kids grew up with more health problems, and one of the suggested causes was that they weren't getting exposed to stuff outside because they were staying indoors all the time.
Well, I think the fact they're just cooped up indoors and can't go running around and doing the stranger things thing with their bikes
might be a cool thing.
I've not seen it, but I do know they ride bikes a lot.
Yes, they do.
But that's something I did a lot as a kid.
Yeah.
And I think it...
I'm pretty sure my normal childhood nowadays will get my parents arrested for child neglect.
Yeah! That is the... Because I had free run of the town.
Yeah.
It's like
who remembers the term latchkey kid?
Oh, yeah.
I was one.
Yeah.
Right here. It's like there were two major streets that I wasn't allowed to cross... And they were major streets. I'm like, they're like 16 lanes, like big freaking streets. because if you cross those, you're going to die. Just don't do that. There's a lot of convenience stores that you can get to from here. And I was allowed basically to go wherever I want from second grade on.
Yeah, pretty much.
And so was my sister at about the same age. So I don't know. I mean, there might be a gender thing going on there. But in my case, there really wasn't in the same way. And we were hardly alone in that in my neighborhood. And now it seems like, if you leave your kid in the car for 10 minutes.
Or let them go to a playground on their own that's around the block.
Yeah, the cops show up.
Yeah.
Is this just me complaining about old? Is this just me old?
This could be us being old.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, and as it relates back to the original point.
Are kids safer now? Because if kids are safer now, I don't care. All right, that's fine.
That could be true.
Yeah.
There is that, too.
Okay, we were wrong.
Because I survived it did not mean everyone did.
Exactly. But then there was also the kidnapping fear going around in the 80s that spawned a lot of this, which turned out to be mostly fabricated.
Right.
I mean, you want to...
Especially related to Satanists.
Right, especially related to Satanists. I think I've done whole episodes on that one alone.
Right.
And now it's like the way they were talking about the way kidnappings were happening in the 80s and 90s. Nowadays, the Amber Alert would never be off.
Right.
Your phone would be useless because it would be Amber Alert after Amber Alert. They would basically just have to start issuing license plate identifications in regular expressions. If the license plate matches this regex, call the police. By the way, here's what a regex is. It's a programming joke. Five listeners are going to love it.
Yeah. Yeah, there are five people cracking up right now. But no, back to how this relates to what this idiot... pardon my editorialism here, this idiot at the EPA was saying. Like,
why are you being so kind?
This is fair. So, like, what the point I was trying to make is that there might be some truth to the concept. I don't know that there is, but there might be some truth to the concept that, you know, you need your kids to be outside so they get exposed to stuff so that they can build immunity to it and they're healthier later.
Yeah.
But just because that might apply to certain bacteria or viruses or whatever else in the natural environment does not mean that same concept applies to pollutants in the air.
Right.
Yep. I will tell you 100% on this one, it does not. Okay. This stuff is bad for you. That's why we're trying to clean it up.
Well, and now you've also got the Department of Energy guy saying that fossil fuels prevent rape.
What?
Yeah.
I don't want to get into it because it's deeply stupid, but that's like that is the
his argument. Just it they keep the lights on.
You know what? I like talking politics like this way more than I like talking about the stupid thing Trump did this week.
Oh boy.
Can I just put that out there?
Sure.
Okay. I'm enjoying this a lot more.
Because
I wanted to kill the best word segment because like I get tired of talking to this guy.
Right.
It's like the weird thing is we're talking about the EPA. We talked about in the last segment, we talked about the anti-Johnson Amendment stuff. I should probably mention that I'm not too worried about the anti-Johnson Amendment thing. I am a little bit worried because a budget needs to be passed and it's likely going to be attached to it. It has a better chance of passing than, say, the anti-Obamacare stuff, which I thought was going to pass. I thought we were going to lose Obamacare. But here we are, November 2017, the legislature, wholly run by one party,
right,
and the executive branch, run by the same party, can't pass legislature to get rid of the one thing that they based their entire political outlook on for the last 8 years.
Right.
Hooray.
The fact that they're just so bad at their jobs that they can't even take over the government correctly. it kind of gives me a little bit of a buffer from the sheer terror, I guess is the way I would describe it.
Right.
It's a candy coating around my sheer terror nougat. I don't know. But, oh, man. Speaking of the GOP, a Senate committee hearing highlighted Russian ads and memes on Facebook during the election, including one showing Satan saying, "If I win, Clinton wins." The hearing was held with lawyers from Facebook, Twitter, and Google to find out how much of an effect Russian misinformation had on the election. Russian agents started a number of groups, both left and right leaning, with names like Blacktivists and Army of Jesus, and used them to spread memes and fake articles designed to polarize American voters. Senators from both sides of the aisle criticized the social media companies for not doing enough to stop the Russian campaigns, while Republican senators downplayed how much Russian involvement directly affected the election. Democratic senators argued that the purpose of the plot was specifically to get Donald Trump elected. I want to have a conversation about this with you guys, because all right. First things first, we have to separate this whole social media stuff from the collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia to get Donald Trump elected via illegally obtained information. That's one thing, and that's a completely different discussion.
Right.
There's this other thing where Russia has vast armies of troll farms, and they're just on the internet trolling. It's what they do. We've been seeing it for years. Any of us who pay attention, it's like I'm on Hackaday, which is a website that I like, and then there's this one article that's fairly technical, but it's got like one dig at the Soviet Union, and then a bunch of people with misspellings that make them sound like Boris and Natasha extras start showing up in the thread, making one comment and leaving. It's like, oh yeah, that wasn't a troll farm. Yeah. Like, well done there. Yeah, totally didn't see that coming. First things first, saying that if a liberal wins, Satan becomes president of the United States. We don't need Russia's help with that. America has been doing that.
We got plenty of Americans willing to say that
for 70 years. I mean, all the stuff that, you know, I saw all the stuff that Russia was doing all the memes that they were apparently spreading, the fake Twitter accounts. It's like, this is kind of stuff we were doing anyway. And I hate to side with Republicans, but I think we're already that bad.
Well, when
I think that this is something that they would have done whether or not.
Yeah. I mean, early days of the show in 2010,
yeah,
we played a video. Well, we were still on television. That's how long ago it was. Yeah. We played a video clip of some religious dude saying that Barack Obama's name means Lucifer, Satan is Jesus. Hallelujah. And the Antichrist. And right now we should be running the world because we're now in the time of tribulations.
Obviously.
That was the argument. Like you and I as atheists and as atheists or whatever. Yeah, so anyway.
I think Russia would have done this whether or not there was any involvement with the from our now leader.
Yeah.
I think they just do it for fun anymore, just to see what happens.
Some people just want to watch the world burn.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, kind of.
See, that just makes me think of a meme I saw of someone pouring Skittles and M&Ms in the same bowl.
No!
That's fine. Skittles and Reese's Pieces. I might murder space and time.
Now, from what I understand, from admittedly a very small amount of research in this, I could be completely misconstruing how this entire thing works. But what the Russians are trying to do is not actually like put out one side's view and, you know, move people specifically one way or another. But what they're trying to do is get people angry. They're trying to get people fired up and separated and polarized. They're trying to make sure that the two sides are not talking to
each other. The key word is polarization.
Right.
They're trying to make it hard. The idea, the social concept here for trolling is, in this case, is that they want no reasonable people. They want no coming together and no agreement.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We were doing that anyway.
Yeah.
I like literally should. Is this a bad thing? Yes, it is.
Right.
But I've been having political conversations with people on the internet for my whole life, minus about 8 years, 10 years. And I've never asked what country the people I'm having the conversation with. We are having our politics. Everybody's politics now happens on a global stage.
Right.
And we've never asked, well, who are we having these conversations with?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. And you can look at how it was this year. It was fairly divisive this year. But it seemed to be, and this is, you know, to go back to a conversation that I had with, say, Gleb Sapersky a while back, this is a trend line. We have been getting more and more divisive. And Russia may have helped, but we were on that path anyway. And that's what I worry about.
Boy,
I feel like, I don't know, there's just something that gets to me on a personal level, the idea that somebody else, like, it's kind of like, you know, you can't beat up my sister. I do that. She's my sister. You're not allowed to do that. It's kind of that thing. Like, yeah, we can be divisive between each other, but when I find somebody else is trying to, like, fan those flames, it makes me really angry.
Okay.
Yeah. When there's an outside source that's trying to manipulate you, it does take on a very different tone.
CIA. I'm sorry. Did I say something?
I've never said that we were not guilty of this.
Yeah.
Too. Like
that's a conversation I've had with people in Europe a lot is, look, I said I didn't like it when we were doing it. Now I have to like it when it's happening to us. No, I hate it. I hate the whole thing categorically.
Absolutely.
Blowback.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I don't fall for that. I'm not going to sit here and accept it just because, you know, in the 20th century, we were doing kind of the same thing. I didn't like it then, and I don't like it now.
Completely.
Yeah.
It was. Yeah. It is.
Stop messing with people.
It is a wrong. It's an objective wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm opposed to my own country doing it as much as anybody else's.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Wouldn't that be nice?
This ultimately leads to the conversation I want to have is you saw, you know, picture like the memes, the image macros, because meme is a stupid word for that. You saw the image macros that were being shared by other people and or by these Russian organizations that were then shared by other people. I saw a lot of them on my wall.
Right.
I did. I don't usually share image macros unless I want to make fun of them. So I don't share a lot of them. But now is a time when I think we need to sit back and not point fingers at each other and say, ha ha, you fell for it. Because that that's not going to help us. I think everybody needs to step back and think about how what happened with this and your politics and how to be better next time. And I because there's a with skepticism and atheism, there always seems to be a little bit of a holier than thou thing going on. And I've never particularly liked it. It's like, haha, I don't, you know, like you've got some fairly prominent skeptics who say, haha, I don't drink or I don't do any drugs because I want my mind as sharp as it can be. Well, frankly, a human mind as sharp as it can be ain't all that sharp. It's about as sharp as a butter knife, which is, if that's as sharp as you can get, go for it. That's fine. I don't, but there always seems to be a little bit of a, well, I do this and everybody else who does something different, they just, you know, they're going to fall for everything. And I'm seeing people who believe in their own skepticism. We're sharing some of those Russian memes. Does that mean I'm going to call them out or make fun of them? No, I think that would be the wrong thing to do. I think we need to use this as a learning, as a teachable moment. Take a step back, learn, figure out how you got there, and help other people see the same thing, and perhaps make us as a group smarter next time, rather than trying to go back to tribal in-group out-group behavior, which is what I'm starting to see now.
Right.
And you know, the skepticism should be a tool for everybody. It shouldn't be a tribal marker. And that scares me, is when I'm a skeptic, and that it's more about your identity as a skeptic rather than applying skepticism to the world and helping the world with your skepticism.
Right.
And that's the most cogent thought I'm having right now about politics is, okay, we fell for it. America fell for it. Whatever. Are we going to now make fun of each other and use this to be further divisive? Or are we going to say, okay, you know, we were trolled?
It would be lovely if we could, you know, have that teachable moment with everybody in the United States and not just the atheist groups or,
right,
or, you know, liberal groups that are, you know, that need to get their hands smacked.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I'm as the whole sense of the sort of purity culture, the, you know, you need to meet this standard before I accept you as one of me. And
yeah.
I see that on every single side. I'm not going to say two sides. I'm like the 5,000 sides out there. They're all trying to become more pure and trying to exclude people who don't fit 100%. And watching that process is what made me just kind of want to step back and say, look, I don't even want to be involved anymore.
Yeah.
But of course, not being involved is its own problem because, you know, if you're not involved, then you can't help. You can't make things better. And so
my response to the balkanization of atheism is to try to be as general as possible. One is to not get into the petty fights because I'm not necessarily here to say everything that's going on in the atheism community. It was a little different when I was a podcast only, but I'm back on radio now. And my point is to show what atheists are like to non-atheists. That's ultimately where I want to be and what I want to be doing. And not even to say that all atheists are like this, but to say this is what a group of atheists in the Pacific Northwest are like. You can ask them questions. They'll respond to you. And we don't agree on very much, just like in any other group, they don't agree on very much.
Right.
You know, I'm the host of the show, but I, you know, my editorial approach to the show is a very light touch because literally no one else agrees with me on anything other than atheism and maybe a couple things about humanism. Becky doesn't agree with me. You don't agree with me. You know, Meredith, there's a lot of disagreement, but the things that we agree on are very important and kind of tie us together, and I want to focus on that. That to me is important. This is Ask an Atheist. Our phone number is 844-753-7842. Our email address is questions@askanatheist.tv. Thank you, Wes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
Been a pleasure.
And yeah, Twitter is Ask an Atheist WA. I was just back for today. I have to go back to work on Radio Tacoma. Watch that space. I'll see you guys next week. All right.
Cool. But, like pizza, I am open to having my mind changed.
Well, yeah. Oh, man, you should have said that. But, yeah. I was like, wow, I just nailed it. Holy
Shazbot.
That was totally accidental.